This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. As we close out our coverage of election night, we'll examine the repercussions of the general election. On the one hand, there has been deep damage done to the national psyche with the unleashing of virulent racism and sexism that many of us thought was long kept hidden. On the other hand, women have turned out in droves to vote, many wearing white pantsuits to commemorate the candidacy of the first major party nominee for president. How it all turns out is still a guess. However, as of now, Donald Trump looks like he is much more likely to occupy the White House than Hillary Clinton, upsetting polls and upsetting a lot of progressives. Melina Abdullah is my next guest. She is a professor and chair of the Department of Pan-African Studies at California State University in Los Angeles. She's active with the Los Angeles chapter of Black Lives Matter and a frequent guest on this program. Welcome to the program, Melina.
Thank you for having me, Sonali. It's a very tense time right now.
So what did you expect would have unfolded this election night? And what are you feeling right now as we're seeing these grim numbers?
Well, I absolutely did not expect that Donald Trump may become our president-elect and is being projected as the likely president-elect. I assumed that Hillary Clinton would win, although, you know, all of us have nightmares. I had nightmares about a Trump presidency. I think that what it indicates for us is that we're going to have, you know, a very rough four years, but I think that it reminds us that freedom has never come through the ballot box, that the kind of freedom and the kind of change that we need really comes from people organizing themselves. And I think that what can happen sometimes with liberal candidates and the victories of liberal candidates is we can sometimes be lulled to sleep and think that you know, by having someone who smiles at us and shakes our hand and doesn't blatantly speak in the kind of really outrageous way that a Donald Trump does, I think we can sometimes think that they have our best interests at heart, and they never do. So I think with a Trump presidency, I think that we at least will know that we cannot be asleep, that we must stay awake and we must stay engaged. And I think it should cause us to redouble our efforts in terms of outside organizing. I think it should also send a message to the Democratic Party, as well as to those of us who are interested in both electoral politics and outside organizing, that we have to do something better than this corporate two-party system, that the people were not mobilized behind a lesser of two evils model, and people were not willing to vote for Hillary. Instead, a smaller number of people were willing to vote against Trump. And we can't have that. We have to have candidates who we feel like we're voting for.
Now, Melina, what about the historic moment of a woman running as a president? It's the first time that a major party has nominated a woman for president. There have, of course, been other parties that have nominated women, but of the two major parties, it was the first time. A lot of, you know, I have good friends who dutifully wore white pantsuits to go and vote, invoking the color that suffragettes wore over 100 years ago to win women the right to vote. Many of these women today on Election Day put their I voted stickers on the graves of Susan B. Anthony and other women suffragettes. Some called them out saying, you know, these were white women who were fighting for white women's votes and not for the votes, voting rights of black women. How do you put it all into context in terms of the historic nature? I thought I would be having you on to talk about the historic first woman presidency, but we don't know whether that's going to happen now.
Right. Well, it's interesting and telling, isn't it, that nobody's putting I voted stickers on Shirley Chisholm's grave, right? The first black woman to run for president, right? The first woman to run for president. So I think it's an indicator that white liberal feminism doesn't resonate with women of color, not in the way that, you know, could have happened had Hillary Clinton taken a more progressive stance. I think what else is being pointed to is that the face on the existing system is less important than the system itself. So I think that what many of us who were not supporters of Hillary Clinton are recognizing is that white supremacist, patriarchal, heteronormative capitalism can come in black bodies, it can come in white women's bodies.
By the way, California's propositions are being called in. California this year had a whopping 17 ballot measures. Some of the early results are pointing very positively for a progressive direction, with Proposition 51, which was a bond for modernizing schools, having passed pretty strongly. Melina is back with us. I was just announcing, Melina, the results of some of the California propositions, which are actually looking quite good in a very progressive direction. I haven't gone through all of them, but at least for now, we are seeing, unfortunately, it looks like Proposition 61 might be defeated because of the inordinate amount of $100 million spent by the big pharmaceutical companies to defeat that proposition. But marijuana legalization looks like it's likely passed. And we're also seeing some of the death penalty ones that are well, unfortunately, the death penalty propositions don't look so good. So it'll remain to be seen how California, whether California will buck the national trend. What do you think?
Right. I think 64 passing is a huge win for decriminalization. It'll mean a lot to those who were locked up. It'll mean a lot to those juveniles who have marijuana convictions. And I think decriminalization is a step in the right direction. I think that I believe 57 also passed, which requires a judge to review whether or not a young person can be tried as an adult rather than leaving that in the hands of prosecutors. So that's also a win. I thought 62 was passing last time I checked, which is the real end to the death penalty. So we
right
wanted
as of now with,
pass,
with 16% of
was 66. I'm sorry.
Right now, with 16% of the votes being counted, Proposition 62 no vote is 54%. Yes vote is 46%, and the anti-death penalty one, Proposition 66.
It's shifted since the last time I've seen.
Right. Well, we'll keep checking. I might have older information, but these are Google election results, and we'll certainly see what happens there. Melina, we have seen some very overtly racist incidents becoming the new norm in these last few years, likely as a result of a number of issues: Obama's presidency, the rise of Black Lives Matter, the rise of Donald Trump. Under a Trump presidency, things are going to get a whole lot worse before they get better, aren't they? Are we seeing an emboldening of racism like we haven't seen since the Civil War, since the Civil Rights Movement?
Maybe since the Civil War, you might be right. I think that more troublesome than where Donald Trump stands is where his supporters stand. So what Donald Trump has done is really unmasked white supremacy in this country. So those on the right have been whipped into a frenzy, and it's become acceptable for unbridled racism to show its face. And so I think that part is especially scary and troublesome.
So now,
I think it demands that we do something better. Hold on one second. I'm sorry. Go to the other door. Or, come on.
Melina Abdullah is my guest, also a mother like
sorry,
I am.
Sorry, I'm a mom.
That's absolutely fine. And, you know, let's talk actually mother to mother, Melina. Before my 9-year-old went to bed tonight, he's been paying close attention to this race. I've tried to explain to him why a Trump presidency would be bad news, particularly for people of color like us. And I've talked to him about how Hillary Clinton may be a very flawed candidate, but she would not be as horrific as a Trump presidency, et cetera, et cetera. And And before he went to bed, he asked me, he was worried. He asked me, has Clinton won or not? And I didn't know what to tell him. I said, we'll let you know in the morning when you wake up. How do we explain this to our children?
Right. My 10-year-old daughter is now planning which country we need to move to, because she's really committed to not living under a Trump presidency. So I think that as mothers, we need to think about what kind of world we're giving to our children. I think a Trump presidency is a very scary future, and it has all kinds of implications around things like public education, around what kind of jobs are gonna be available, around questions like unionization. I think all of us who are working class people or involved in any way in organized labor need to be particularly on guard around a Trump presidency. So all kinds of rights are going to be eroded under a Trump presidency, and I don't even want to think about what kind of Supreme Court precedents might be set under a Supreme Court where his appointments have taken the bench. And so I think it's really important, again, that we stay organized, that we make our children, our young people, and everyone we know understand their power, that we don't have to simply submit to a government that is not, in fact, for the people, and a Trump administration. And I want to be very clear. It's not that I thought that Hillary Clinton would be the answer. In fact, I did not support Hillary Clinton. I supported Jill Stein. In California, thankfully, we have the freedom to do that. And I wanted to be able to vote for someone, not just against someone else. That said, I think that Hillary Clinton would have represented the kind of oppression that we're used to with Donald Trump. This is something that's completely new and really, really very frightening for so many of us.
Well, 538.com has now revised their polls. Earlier in the night, they were showing a 50-50 with Clinton, maybe a little bit more now. The odds of Clinton winning the presidency are only at 14%. According to 538, 84% likelihood of a Trump presidency. Now, you brought up Jill Stein. Melina, I'll go on record and say that I also voted for Jill Stein, also because we live in California. But how do you view the blame game that played out leading up to this election by many progressives who wanted to blame the Green Party for possibly ruining the election rather than blaming the Democratic Party for not being good enough?
Right. Well, I think number one, I think we have the absolute right to vote for the candidate that we agree with. I most agreed with Jill Stein and Ajamu Baraka. And whether I don't know if I'd have had the courage to vote for them if I lived in Ohio or Florida, but we do live in California. And just I think there's a fundamental misunderstanding of how the electoral process works by most voters. Right. So I had people angry at me, even in California, for supporting Jill Stein. And I was saying there's no chance that California would go Trump. So I have the freedom to vote for Jill Stein. Right. And so I think that we need to remember and we need to do a little bit of civics education to let folks know that this is a winner take all system. And it doesn't matter if Hillary Clinton wins by 50% plus one in California or 80% in California. She gets all 55 electoral votes. And so there needs to be some civics education. But even if we lived in Ohio, I think that it's really important that we really challenge ourselves and think about what it means that we're telling people, especially Black people, especially working class people and other people of color and women, to go along to get along, right? To vote for the lesser of two evils. That is problematic. People have the right to demand that they have a candidate that they actually agree with on most things. Many of us said that we don't agree with Hillary Clinton on most things. Many of us said that we're not motivated by her. Many of us said that it's not just the policies that she advocated for under her husband's presidency, but the policies, the kind of hawkish tendencies that she had when she herself served as Secretary of State. And so it's very difficult to get people on the left behind someone who is not, in fact, in line with our fundamental beliefs. And so I think this should be a challenge to the Democratic Party to have better candidates, to run better candidates and stop playing these games. I mean, if we think about what happened before the primary elections were really even close to done, corporate media, along with the Democratic Party, pretty much declared Hillary Clinton the Democratic nominee. And, you know, pushed Bernie Sanders out before it was a done deal. And I don't think that was fair. I mean, there was tremendous enthusiasm. Where it's either a Democrat or a Republican who are both wholly owned by corporate interests as our only viable options. And I think that what we're seeing with this, especially with our liberal friends, is a challenge for them to say that the Democratic Party can't just be the lesser of two evils. The Democratic Party has to be something that really represents the interests of the people. And I think they also need to make way for third parties. It's not really a democratic process when you have one of two choices, and the two candidates that are selected for you have been selected by corporate interests. So that's not what democracy means to me.
Well, finally, Melina, if there was one thing that the Bernie Sanders candidacy did show the Democratic Party, it was that you can win popular support if you go leftward. For years, the Democratic Party had been moving right, trying to win over the same voters that the Republicans had, so that in the end, progressives largely became independent voters. Largely, many might be sitting out these elections because they'd rather not vote for anybody than vote for, you know, someone just to keep another person out. But of course, it remains to be seen if the Democratic Party will take that lesson from all of this. Also, I remember in the polls not that you can trust polls anymore, but when there was a matchup between the candidacies of Bernie Sanders and Trump, Sanders beat him in hypothetical matchups very, very easily with a much greater margin than Clinton did. And we might have been in a very different country today. I don't know how I would survive the next 4 years under a Trump presidency. Melina, do you?
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to survive this next 4 years. I know that it means we're going to have to rely a lot more on each other and, you know, recognize that these kinds of interests have never had our interests at heart. These kinds of representatives have never had our interests at heart. So we're going to have to do it for ourselves.
I was looking forward to not having to see Donald Trump's face after tonight. I suppose that might be wholly different. Right. Again, as we're closing up this program, there is still a small chance Clinton could win the presidency. But it's shrinking. It's getting smaller and smaller. And a number of predictors are now, with a lot of states having called their votes, showing a greater than 95% chance of Trump winning the presidency. 538.com calling it at more than 85%. I suppose that will all be closed up definitively over the next few hours. Melina, thank you so much for joining us. I'll see you out on the streets.
Yep. Thank you so much, Sally.
Melina Abdullah is a professor and chair of the Department of Pan-African Studies at Cal State University, Los Angeles, active with the LA chapter of Black Lives Matter. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Thank you so much for watching, and I'll see you next time.